Then there was another sea change, which was I had fell in love with the music of Magma.
Right.
And I really wanted to work on longer composed forms that were very complex, and I wanted to go back to writing because I just felt like composition was the next vista for me.
Were you listening to Magma when Gods of Chaos was conceived?
I think I was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I don't think they were
as central.
Magma's a tough nut to crack. There's things about it that I think turn people off stylistically vis-a-vis the vocals.
Right.
And some of this sort of more fusion-y sort of one-chord jamming.
Right.
I'm sure you have no problem with that.
I mean, yeah, I've never really gotten that into Magma. It's
a tough nut.
Although, I do like Christian Vander's drumming in, like, other, especially in other contexts.
I think that they have a few key works, and then a lot of it is not. I can see why people wouldn't be into it.
Yeah.
It's not like all of their albums are good, and I recommend them. A lot of music is this way with me, where literally one aspect of it will hit me super hard, and then everyone's going like, are you serious? This band? Like, what are you talking about? And Magma was really that thing where I almost had to proselytize about it, because it wasn't like I could just hand you any Magma record,
right,
and you'd be blown away. Dude, this version of Cantarcos on Magma Live is insane, but don't listen to the rest of the record by all means, you know, or whatever. I was really obsessed with De Futura, which was this 20-minute long piece by the bass player Janik Top, and I figured that if I was going to write a 20-minute long notated piece, it would really behoove me to analyze a 20-minute long notated piece. So we set out, I put together a new lineup in 2001 that was focused on people who were a little more prog in their orientation. I think I first met Alex Perkalup, who's a real character. He played a fretless precision bass, which appealed to me greatly, and he was a super Magma head. I think that's why we kind of hit it off, because he was psyched that somebody was so into Magma. So I basically was like, well, we should try to do some cool shit like this. Jonathan Hischke had been playing with Chuck Valzone, my old bandmate.
Yeah.
And there was one hilariously decisive factor where I decided that Jonathan Hischke should be in my band. I think they were playing together in a group called Sorry. Might have been called Sorry at that point.
Okay.
Chuck Valzone and some other people. And it was sort of, you know, like a skin graft type noise rock band.
Vaguely sounds familiar.
Yeah. I don't even know. They might have just recorded a few things, but not really, you know, they didn't really have a profile. In between songs, somebody was doing something, and Stahl, Jonathan Hischke, played the bass line of Tom Sawyer with the sort of effects pedals. He had it basically like all set up and ready to go. And I just, for some reason, I just thought, that's the guy. Let's use this Geddy Lee guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing was, Jonathan was also a bass player, but I really needed, once it started going, I was kind of like, I don't know if two bass players, I like that in theory.
Right.
But in sound, there's not enough like higher register information for me.
Okay.
So I sort of cajoled Jonathan Hischke into stringing his bass with guitar strings.
Okay.
Really, Jonathan on those records is playing the guitar on a bass.
Interesting.
Yes. And
some Bill Orcutt kind of move.
Yes, and he was never that crazy about it. He actually was. Jonathan Hischke, poor Jonathan, there were many times in that band where he's like, dude, why are you making me do all this stuff? I just want to be a bass player.
Right.
Like, to Jonathan, like, his thing is jumping up and down and playing like an open A string. Like, that's what he really wants to do. And he, you know, he's good at that. But I was like, well, look, man, I was a real hard ass. I was like, look, if you're going to be in the Flying Luttenbachers, you're not a bass player. You're a fucking musician or some bullshit like that. Like, I sat him down and gave him this hard line of like, look, man, you're going to play the notes I give you because that's what needs to be played.
Right.
Or some really insane shit like that. And he kind of swallowed and was like, okay.
Well, and you said many times it's like, it's not about, you know, what you play. It's about who you are, you know, so.
Well, that was the thing. I picked these guys because I thought they had the right sensibility and we got along pretty good. And I was very domineering and I had a vision and I wanted it to be done.
Yeah.
That said, I think that for the first year of the band in 2001, I think we weren't a very good sounding band. We didn't have very good equipment. We were kind of playing beyond our technical levels.
And that era of the Ludenbachers is a little more of a blind spot for me, too, as far as, like, listening.
I think that we finally got good towards the end in 2002, but we recorded the album too early. Mm-hmm. It's very pieced together. My production skills weren't exactly at their apex at that point. I was really ambitious. There's a lot of overdubs and fixes on that record. I think basically Alex's bass tracks were done the way they were done, and the drums for the most part were done the way they were tracked. A lot of Jonathan's stuff was edited or re-recorded or overdubbed, and I even overdubbed some of his parts just because it was easier to just do it. Right. Nothing against him. I mean, the guy can play, you know, he's a player, he can play, but I just needed that record to turn out the way I wanted it to turn out, and it was kind of like my vision, so I just took charge of it, and I was doing it all myself on my PC anyway, so.
Right.
The first version wasn't, I was so fried at that point, I didn't really master it well. It's very shrill, very irritating. I later got a chance to remaster it, and it's light years better. I did that maybe about 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And it's much better. But at that point, we started working with this New Jersey label called Trouble Man Unlimited.
Yeah.
Which, thank you.
Vignola.
Thank you.
Hopelijk is onze aandachtspanne langer dan die van de gemiddelde goudvis, want we zijn weer klaar voor een uurtje radio vanuit onze visbokaal van Scorpio in hal 5. Goedenavond en welkom bij Senior Huis. We starten hier vanavond met een heel plezant plaatje van het New Yorkse succes. We weten niet zoveel over de band, behalve dat het een viertal is met onder andere Matt Palmer, die ook bij Sheer Mac speelt. Hun EP, genaamd First Edition, is net uit op Bandcamp. 7 nummers, extreem energieke postpunk, fulminerend en leuk, gemaakt van snelle puntige riffs met funny breaks. Je zal het wel horen. Dit is succes met The Fool.
Oh my God!
Pain Without a Touch is de eerste nieuwe muziek van het uit Kansas afkomstige Sweeping Promises na de release van hun debuutalbum Hunger for a Way Out van vorig jaar. En het is een eerste wapenfeit voor Sub Pop in de US, maar ook Violet Records, die hun vorige uitbrachten, is nog in de picture, want zij doen de release voor Europa. Grundeis, grondijs dus in het Duits, is een jonge band uit Hamburg. Hun recente debuut Amygdala is een gevarieerde mix van postpunk, shoegaze en noise rock. Op Run haalt zangeres Laura Muller extra venijnig uit. Hier is Grundeis met Run.
Oh,
heerlijk nieuw nummer van Dead Things, opgestart door het Nieuw-Zeelandse duo Joseph Thomas en Aaron Violet. En intussen uitgebreid naar een viertal met als homebase Berlijn. Het zo net gespeelde Reanimation is een mooi voorbeeld van een heerlijke punkmelodie te vinden op hun nieuwe platen The Dead and Resurrection of Jonathan Cowboy, uit bij Urge Records. En we blijven in Berlijn. Dit is een nieuwe van het punktrio Liek, van op een binnenkort te verschijnen nieuwe platen Deep Pour. Liek met Object. de ziekte van het moment. Dit was het uber-catchy Tunnel Vision van het Utrechtse trio Daisy Daisy. Fairy Liquid is hun debuut-EP vol met gruiselijke punk-elektronica op het nieuwe label Capitaal Records. Van Utrecht gaan we naar Antwerpen, want daar sleutelt het drietal Disorientations al even aan hun debuut Memory Lanes. Gisteren losten ze een tweede lap Killer Postpunk uit die plaat Allied van Disorientations. onmiskenbaar Just Mustard, dat tegenwoordig net als Disorientations bij Pias zit met een voorloper uit een nieuwe plaat, M.I.U. Hannah Merrick en Greg Whittle die leerden elkaar kennen achter het toog van een café in Liverpool. Ze besloten samen muziek te maken en voor die muziek moeten ze zich zeker niet excuseren, want King Hannah die leverde, want als King Hannah leverde ze al een paar zeer sfeervolle singles af. Het is dus uitkijken naar I'm Not Sorry, I'm Just Being Me. Die plaat komt er in februari aan en dit is daaruit All Being Fine van King Hannah.
Being fine.